on this episode of Podigious.
Normally, it's a bit where we check in on how they've like changed as people and stuff, but the most notable changes are because they change clothes.
Password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
Podigious.
Welcome to Podigious, episode 505, The Road to Eldradimon.
Digimon Data Squad, Karada Arc, Part 1.
Recorded December 17th, 2017.
Podigious is your critically nostalgic, analytical tour through the Digimon anime. I'm the giant turtle the podcast rides on, Jeff Rudberg, and I'm joined by our boss fighter who locks us all in a shed to sort out our problems, Ashley McDonald.
Flashy Bancho Punch! I just mixed up the Cyber Sleuth attack and the one in Data Squad, because who knows what his real attack is? I don't know.
Our fan favorite host, who occasionally disappears for long stretches of time while he recruits hundreds of ninjas, Asher Soffman.
Whoa.
And our secret commander, who goes missing for long stretches in the digital world and then shows up again as if nothing's changed, Andrew Soffman.
Nothing's allowed to change anymore now that I'm here.
This week, we're looking at the Biohybrids half of the Karada arc with episodes 26 through 33. So here's a quick recap.
In episode 26, memory is the first thing to go, aka more like recrap episode. The memory wipers become the memory wipees as our wannabe men in black get one-upped by actual men in black. The Digimon try to reactivate memories by turning the episode into a clip show. Marcus and Thomas get emotional reunions, and Yoshi remembers she had a roommate.
In episode 27, the beginning of the end, aka Bio Armor Energize. Karada makes Dats go kablats, and the kids kidnap Kenan's parents and force them to faithfully reenact the traumatic loss of their son. The kids meet a goth lolly snake, a Thunderbird bro, and an inner monologue challenged swole Stegosaurus. And Samson stays behind to chill with them because he's too cool to get any screen time.
In episode 28, Digivice Meltdown, aka Only You Can Prevent Forest Massacres, Kenan runs away from the digital field trip and Marcus gets rejected when he asks out a Jojo Leon. Karata decides to destroy a forest with his Toyota Prius trio, but the kids scare them away by friendship being so hard they shattered their phone screens.
In episode 29, How to Fix a Broken Digivice, aka Dojo's Bizarre Training Montage, the kids search for an Apple store to repair their iPhone screens, but instead Jojolian traps them in a shed until they pass a DNA test. Marcus learns that the key to a Mega Digivolution is the vaguest awareness of his emotions, and the other two characters unlock Mega Evolutions by saying, eh, why not?
That's so true. In episode 30, Journey to the Sacred City, aka You Can't Fight Sacred City Hall, the kids struggle to find a city-sized Digimon until it walks over them, mainly because Bancho Leomon told them to use Apple Maps.
Burn
on Jeff's old project. The residents of the giant turtle try to murder the kids, but they're spared once Marcus mentions that he's related to a famous person. Yay! Kenan goes through a ninja phase and tries to recreate a Mimi moment. Hashtag Mimi moments.
Hashtag our queen.
I would follow Mimi moments.
Exactly.
In episode 31, Showdown Between Geniuses, Thomas versus Nanami, aka Geniuses Nanamimus. Since Ivan already has a crush on Yoshi and Koki already has a crush on Marcus, Karada incepts Nanami into having a crush on Thomas. Marcus and Kenan run off to remove themselves from the main plot, while Thomas protects a waterfall because he thinks it's a dam. Nanami tries to tempt Thomas to the dark side, but he wins using the power of the Marcus side.
Boo.
It's very boo-worthy.
Boo. I'm sure we're going to talk about Marcus.
In episode 32, The Sacred City's Last Stand, aka Digi Dates and Digi Gates, Ivan asks Yoshi out on a date, refuses to understand the meaning of the word no, and then becomes a dinosaur and tries to kill her. Karada transports an entire city of Digimon to the human world and gets absolutely no praise for it.
That was like free public transportation, guys. You know, like, what's a fella supposed to do in this world? Okay.
He kind of flooded part of a city.
That's transportation into a water park. Okay. In episode 33, the final biohybrid battle, aka Koki Karaoke, Marcus unlocks a new accessory slot for Shiny Greymon, allowing them to defeat the final Toyota Prius. Yoshi and Thomas stand around and let Karada destroy Eldradimon with a Spear of Longinus he imported from Evangelion. Also, Thomas gets in a helicopter. Oh no.
Not the helicopter.
Okay. So TLDR, this arc, there was the recap clip episode, there was the episode where they go to the digital world, the episode where they defend Cherrymon's forest and break their digivices and they fix the digivices, then there's the episode where they go to the city, then there's the episode where Thomas beats Nanami, then the one where Yoshi beats Ivan, and then the one where they're in the real world, their human world, and Marcus beats Koki. What do we all think about this arc? What is our one word reaction? Ashley, what's your one word?
Downhill. No more Rukimon, no more good show.
Poor Ashley.
But now we have Bancho Leomon.
Bancho Leomon was the only good thing.
I knew you would like Bancho Leomon. I think I might like Bancho Leomon more than you do, but
Bancho Leomon's a cool dude.
He's great.
But why does he know things?
He's Bancho Leomon. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like, why does he need a reason to know things? Why doesn't anyone else in this show know things? Because they all went to Bancho Leomon.
Asher, what's your one word?
I think thrilling. I actually really enjoyed this arc. Yeah.
Oh, God. Wrong.
Because we have very different interests, Ashley.
Tell me what you liked about this part.
I think also I went into this arc with strongly negative expectations because I think the first thing, I think last time I saw the preview for the next episode and I was like, ugh, I'm going to hate everything about this. I hate Marcus. I hate everything. Why does he keep getting rewarded for this crap behavior? And that was still way in play in this arc. It was so annoying and it got even worse, honestly. But I really enjoyed the battles. I actually, I found the animation in the Marcus and Koki fight to be really good once I finally got to actually see it and not fast forward through it. I found the Thomas and Nanami fight really, there was so much they almost got into there. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And then she brought Marcus back up at the very end. And I'm like, oh. Of course, the Ivan episode was absolutely terrible. But I think I have mostly blocked it out of my mind, even though I watched it about an hour ago.
I was proud that the ending didn't go fully terrible.
Yes.
To be honest.
Yes. I was really scared for a moment, but then she was like, he doesn't even know he did anything bad. And there is the recognition that he did do something bad.
Yeah.
Like, at least there's that.
I was like, no, don't forgive him, Yoshi.
And then
No, it's Karada.
It still sucks that she's not blaming him. But no, at least he's not absolved. Yes. Thank God.
I was so afraid. I was like, no, don't do it, Joe. Don't do it.
So that episode was a low point and the recap episode was boring. But other than that, I was actually engaged, I feel, for the first time this season.
Ugh, so much. Okay, Asher, whatever. a classic Asher-Ashley disagreement.
It is. And it's a classic Asher divide because it's over action versus.
It's true. I was just like, why do I have to watch this fight? I don't care.
I like action. You like introspection, and there was not the introspection was there, but it was pretty clumsy.
It was pretty bad.
Especially for normally where Digimon shines in character development is during Digivolution episodes, and this was nope, we're not even doing that this time.
Oh my god, the fact that Yoshi literally sat on the floor while Marcus and Thomas actually fought the things, I was like, I hate everything.
Yeah. I actually thought that was really funny, because like the point wasn't to fight the things. Like, fighting the things didn't do anything.
But she also wasn't trying to do anything the right else. Idea.
Okay, that's true.
Right. I hated at the moment, I hated that fact that she wasn't like trying to do anything with them, but I also like, in retrospect, that like that wasn't the thing that actually helped, and she was just like, I'm not bothering to do this stupid thing. Like,
yeah, it was stupid.
But it doesn't work in universe, because it's not like they were being told that was the thing to do, you know, like, so she was just like blatantly disregarding order, like it didn't, whatever.
Well, they were told to find the strength inside of them, and Marcus and Thomas were both like, so you mean punchy punchy fight fight? And I don't know, Yoshi didn't try, but at least she could like sit there and maybe think about it.
I don't think she didn't,
but like one can pretend she was.
It's okay, because she just magically got it in the end.
She nodded along and
It was annoying to me that Marcus like got it and the other dude didn't, but like at this point Digimon is always pulling this crap. The only reason it bothers me so much with Marcus is because he's never punished for his crap.
Yeah, the show doesn't even like realize it's crap most of the time. It's like, it's entertaining, so we're cool, right? Andrew, what's your one word?
I don't even remember.
Would you say your word is forgettable then?
I mean, it's not forgettable. It's just, I don't think I even came up with a word.
Well, I can do mine first. I also forgot to come up with a word, but on the spot, I came up with plotty. Like, it is, plotty. I feel like the...
Full of plot.
I feel like, yeah, like the momentum of plot has been growing. Like, it's not like it was just came into play in these episodes, but I feel like it's gotten more and more interesting, and it's actually built on top of things as we've gone along. Like, we've lost Marukimon, but the like escalation between the humans and Digimons feels like has continued to grow. And it kind of like the episode with Baramon and the before they first go into the Sacred City, whatever, which is, by the way, just a kind of BS way to, whatever, the way they retreat that city is like the Sacred City. It's like, well, what is secret about it? What? Like, what? Whatever. Anyway. And it reminded me so much of Try and the like BS, oh, it's actually been about Digimon hating humans thing they throw in the last minute to Try. Not the last minute. Throw in like around part four. And that, in contrast to that, Savers has been working on that from the beginning, and it has like slowly built up, and it's to the point where they go into a town and get, you know, strung up for murder, or not, they get almost murdered for being human, and that feels like plausible in this world because of the tension we've seen escalate over 28 episodes or whatever. I just like, I don't know, a reminder that like they put in the work and they did it well, and I think the it's just going in an interesting direction, continues to. And I really, I don't know, at the beginning of the arc, I really liked the biohybrids. By the end of it, I was like, okay, I'm kind of done with you. I'm kind of glad they're gone. They've already worn out their welcome.
You liked them?
I liked them in the beginning when they were first introduced. And I was like, I like their quirkiness. And then, like, over time, I was like, nah,
no,
I don't.
Their Digimon design?
They were fine.
Oh. You hesitated for way too long to be true.
So, yeah, I mean, I like a lot of ideas that the biohybrids brought up, which we'll get into later. But, yeah. Andrew, do you have your word?
No.
Word is no.
The word is no. This episode of Pettage is brought to you by the word no, since clearly Ivan doesn't know it, so we need to teach you.
Yeah, it's just like, why is everyone just so brainwashed? Like, they don't even stop to consider anything.
Who doesn't stop to consider what?
Everyone working for Karada.
This actually is a thing. I was like, I want to know what people who are not like the biohybrids think of Karada. Like, why?
Like, he has like a whole, you know, endless stream of unnamed, unfaced helpers.
I do have faces. They talk. It's just them talking about commands.
That soldier dude, like, in the front in every, is he in a boat? Yeah. In all the boat scenes, like, he looked super dead inside.
He looks super dead inside.
I don't think he likes Karada. I guess we can talk about this when we get into the characters, but I liked that their motivations were so shallow, actually. I thought that was very
realistic,
sort of believable. You just stop caring. I liked it most on Koki. I thought that was like a fun type of villain to have in contrast to Karada.
It's just like, I just want to beat up Marcus.
Like, I like it so much better on Koki than I do on Marcus.
Koki throws Marcus by the face.
Yes, I saw that.
It's pretty cool. Marcus had it coming in.
I think my favorite Koki moment is when, like, Kuromon comes in and Koki just, like, kicks him out of the sky. I'm like, whoa, what
the? Oh, yeah.
Wait, who?
Kuromon. They're, like, in the... It's before they go back to their human world, and Kuromon just, like, flies in, and Koki just, like, jumps from the ground and kicks Kuromon out of the sky.
I think Koki is sort of like my Digimon Data Squad Bakugo.
Okay.
He's so, like, attempt to say anything he's doing is good, and that's great. It's just, like, refreshingly honest. Instead of having to...
Yes. I guess
you really go in a different way than I relate to Koki. I don't relate to Koki. I just like him.
Okay. Wait, so I finally formalized my thoughts when I was saying before about, like, oh, it's good plot. I think it's more that, like, this arc had a bunch of cool ideas, like, that it's nice to see an execution, like, Dats blowing up is nice to see, like, the kids kind of on their own for once. And I really didn't like, actually, the episode right after Dats was up, like, based on the preview, I thought they were going to be looking for Kenan's parents without any guidance. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, they don't know where to go, so they have to, like, disguise themselves and, like, go into the hotel to find Kenan's parents because they don't know who else to go to. But then, like, once in the actual episode, it's like, Samson's like, you should go do this. And they're like, okay, we're doing this. And, like, so it's just another mission. Okay, whatever. It's not very interesting. So I liked when Samson was finally taken out of the picture for good.
What? No.
Murdered. He's not totally murdered. He's totally dead.
Yes. Very dead.
Gone. Looks of shock and horror.
So
he's wherever Spencer Damon is.
Yeah, and so them, like, on their own trying to figure out things to do. Even when they meet up with Yushima, he's also kind of, like, not, like, he's technically, like, superior to them by a lot, but not like, I'm gonna give you orders. They're all just figuring out what to do on the fly. I also think, like, ideas like a city-sized Digimon, that's a cool idea. Sending a city-sized Digimon to the human world, that's another cool idea. Then killing the city-sized Digimon with a giant lance from the sky, that's another cool, like, there's a bunch of these,
is,
like,
it?
I think these are all cool ideas. I mean, the execution isn't, you know, perfect in all of them, but...
Many questions about Karada's access to, like, who is making all this stuff? How does he have such high output? Ridiculous. Whatever
Yeah. But the last thing I wanted to mention is, like, a cool concept to see played out is, like, a multi-episode siege on one location. Although, I like that. I like the idea. And even, like, the location spans two different worlds. It gets transported to the human world. But so the thing that I find frustrating about it is that, like, at the end, we find out it's pretty clear, like, why he wanted to destroy Eldradimon to absorb the huge amount of data or whatever. But until that point, it kind of feels totally random. It feels like Bancholimon told him to go to a place, and they go to a place, and they have to defend it. And it's like, why is this under attack now? Was it? I thought at first it was because they were there, but then it's clear that eventually it becomes clear it's not just because they're there. It's just like...
They want to kill two birds with one stone, except the stone's a giant lance.
Sure, my point is eventually you find out why, and it makes sense, like, his plan makes sense. But until that point, for, like, three episodes until that point, you're kind of like, this feels way too coincidental and silly, and they've all just converged for no reason. And then I don't know if finding out that there was a plan eventually makes that any less narratively satisfying during those three episodes. But to the point earlier we made about the henchmen, like, why are they so brainwashed and everything? Like, I think they've bought Karada's his spin on things, that the Digimon are dangerous and need to be defeated, or else they will attack the human world. And I feel like it's hard. I feel like the kids and all the Dats people know enough context to know that's wrong, to know that there are many more sides of Digimon than just violent attacking. But
I completely disagree with you. Wait, you're not talking about the hybrids. You're talking
I'm not talking about the hybrids. I'm talking about the nameless henchmen.
You bet pirates.
Sorry, what was that? I think you cut
it. Who knows? They don't have souls. They're just soldiers.
Also, okay, even though the unlocking evolutions was really poor and poorly executed, the new evolution sequences themselves I thought were pretty dope.
Except for the first time they do it in the dub.
Is it different the first time they do it?
The frame rate died.
Did anyone else notice that?
No.
Then it didn't happen.
I noticed was that in their new outfits, their arm, like, it looked like the people had been traced like really weirdly. Hmm. I don't know. It was not in like the new Digivolution sequences. It was earlier. It was in their just the first Digivolution in their new outfits. And I was like, what? Why does Marcus look like he have noodle arms?
Noodle arm Marcus. Also, even in the addition to the three kids doing their new Digivolution sequence, the biohybrids also had a cool, I guess they don't actually have like a Digivolution sequence, they have a scan or a charge sequence, and the way that their like Digivices, it makes no physical sense, but like the Digivices slide out of their sleeve and like it just looks cool every time.
Yeah. Wait, the biohybrids?
Yeah.
Well, it's on like some wrist thing.
I don't think they ever show that, and like they show like what
they do.
They do?
I think you can see it.
It's like attached to some flip thing on their wrist.
Huh.
Like the way that Assassin's Creed knives work.
Hmm.
I don't actually know anything about Assassin's Creed. I just know that that's how it works.
Now that they have knives, that's basically all there is to know.
Exactly. And I know they do parkour.
Yeah. So is everyone else in agreement that biohybrids, like with the thumbs down on the biohybrids in general?
Like
they're a good idea. It's just they're just horribly executed.
Well, I think we'll get into the idea more. So like, let's talk about the execution, like what we actually, whether we enjoyed or didn't enjoy them. Ashley, what were you going to say?
I mean, Ivan can walk off a cliff.
He wouldn't feel it, though.
Wow. I mean, you have a point since this whole thing is defense. Anyway, I don't know. I appreciate Nanami and Koki.
I feel like Ivan was the only one who had a consistent shtick. Like, Koki starts off by, like, his shtick being that he's, like, narrating his own memoir and then just, like, loses that. I guess it kind of makes sense. He stops doing that once he gets defeated by Marcus, and then it's just, like, all he talks about is how he wants to beat Marcus. Totally has a crush on him, by the way.
Marcus!
Oh, can someone answer a question? Is he voiced by Matt? Like, he sounds really familiar.
Koki?
Yeah.
He's voiced by Henry.
Aha!
Anyway, Nanami also, like, I feel like she didn't have a shtick. She was just a straight man to both of the wackiness until Karada's just like, oh, by the way, he's a genius, just like you, wink, wink. And I swear he just flipped a switch in her personality or something and, like, turned on genius mode because, like, that's all she cared about then. And
yeah, no, I mean, her shtick was being like mysterious and goth and vaguely evil.
No, she's not goth. She's gothic scary. Lolita.
Okay, yes, she's gothic Lolita. You are correct.
It feels weird to call it gothic Lolita. I'm like, I only think of it as like goth lolly. Gothic Lolita. So so formal. So more about Nanami?
I think she's fast. I think the fact that she Thomas kept asking her, like, why are you doing this? And she just, like, flat out refused to tell him. I actually think that's very, like, that's a hook.
Well, I thought she
really got her hooks into Thomas, honestly.
I mean, she did eventually just explain it was, like, she just enjoyed it, right? Like,
I don't think that was the whole story.
Well, it's just business, according to two of the three.
I totally believe that about Koki and Ivan because they are not in the least bit intelligent.
Actually, didn't she do it because she was bored?
I mean, I don't think that's all of it.
I mean, it's part of it. It's like a huge part of
sure.
it.
Sure. Like, she's a jerk. She likes power games.
But does she like Hunger Games?
No. Key question. No one likes Hunger Games, Ashley.
Flies.
Okay, so that I think we've checked in with all the biohybrids. So let's check in with our main characters. They normally we check in on how they've like changed as people and stuff, but the most notable changes are because they change clothes.
Whoa!
Crazy. Which I didn't notice. They go back to their normal lives and they just choose new wardrobes because they're back to their normal lives.
No, they wake up though and are like, how did I get here? What's happened?
Do they?
Yeah.
I guess at least then.
In the new clothes.
Yes. Yeah. He wakes up on a random bench.
Yeah, like that.
Outside of Dax. Kind of,
like maybe memory wiping takes more than 2 seconds. Like maybe they walked home in a haze and then changed. They're still like suffering the effect of this traumatic brain event and lie down on a park bench randomly. I don't know. Seems shady, but like it does appear that they went home before they woke up because Sarah and Christy and Thomas's butler guy were all also brainwashed. And like,
well, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, everybody went to their house.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, someone went to the house and they could have presumably brought Marcus along with them if they went to their house. So, like, there's stuff being done off screen. And at the point where things are being done off screen, then we can, you know,
I think somebody changed them. I think somebody got them naked and put new clothes on them.
Like, you've been in the clothes too long. Maybe they just brainwashed them. But they just got back from the digital world, right? They've been there for a while without any, like, resupplying or anything. So maybe they're just like, you smell bad. New clothes because you smell terrible. New clothes.
They were only gone for a day.
Yeah, I guess it was pretty short. Right. Yeah.
But, like, they were doing strenuous activity.
Yes.
When I go for, like, a 35-minute run, I am not wearing those clothes anymore.
But they were in the snow.
Doesn't matter. You still sweat when you work out in the snow. It's actually worse.
Yeah. It's not pleasant.
So anyway, now that we're done talking the mechanics of the clothes for an hour, I didn't really notice they changed. I feel bad.
No, come on, Jeffrey.
Okay. The only characters which I noticed they definitely changed were Miki and Megumi, where I was like, ooh, what are these new outfits?
I was like, these outfits are terrible. I'm like, stop.
So we'll explain them with pictures, but we'll explain them with words. But you can also find pictures on our website, pottage.com/505. Miki and Megumi normal, or before, were kind of like Officer Jenny ripoffs. They basically look like cops, kind of. And now...
No, they were office ladies.
Yeah, I guess like a mixture of office lady.
They remind me of... stewardesses. They look like ship workers, actually.
They look like they work for the government as public servants.
I don't think the government would...
Definitely don't.
I mean... Would that gap between the skirt and the thigh... no.
I mean,
don't think that would fly.
They do look like ship workers, whatever the term for that is. But I think so much of, like, Japanese schoolgirl fashion has already been informed by sailor outfits that, like, I can't really tell if that's, like, is that just that influence or is... Anyway. But their new outfits are, like, it's kind of like clandestine government joggers is the aesthetic I think it's going for.
No, they're totally bikers, especially Megumi.
I guess it's biker aesthetic more than jogger, but, like, it looks more like... It looks like they're trying to be covert, but they're very loud outfits.
They are very loud outfits.
They would probably fit in right next to Riley in her winter outfit.
The opera gloves on Miki are not inconspicuous.
So back to Marcus. Marcus
I'm
goes from
really
his
mad.
You're mad about Marcus?
His clothes.
Well, so his clothes before were like a plain white t-shirt with a orange little jacket thingy, and now it's like just a shirt on top of
it. You've never worn a shirt over a shirt?
It's not a button-down shirt, but it is open. Maybe it has buttons.
Yes. It definitely has buttons.
But I don't want to say Marcus is wearing a button-down shirt. That seems wrong.
Wrong. What we refer to colloquially as button-down shirts are not the technical definition of a button-down shirt. A button-down shirt, like, technically is a dress shirt. But that is a short-sleeved shirt with a collar that probably has buttons.
What Ashley prefers is a black or Greymon button-down shirt.
No. But Jeff, this is something a middle school to high schooler would wear on dress-down days at school.
I mean, I wear this.
Most schools don't have a concept of dress-down days unless you go to a fancy private school.
I was like, what the heck are you talking about? If people wanted to wear this, they just wear this to our school.
Andrew and I went to private school, all right?
But although in Japan, this would... Yeah, middle schools typically have uniforms. Elementary schools don't. And he's a second year middle school student, which he's not
he
a third year
uniform. We've seen his uniform. Well,
have we?
Yes, we have. Like at least twice.
Oh yeah, true. Anyway, so but yeah, he wouldn't wear this to school. Is my main point. Anyway, so that's his old outfit. Now his new outfit. Spend 20 minutes discussing each thing.
He looks so much older.
Does he?
I think he does. Oh, I thought he does.
Look older.
It's like he has a dark t-shirt underneath, and it's also a sleeveless shirt. Yeah, it's a sleeveless shirt, and then a jacket vest on top that's like a mixture of red and white, and a dog. No, he always has a dog tag.
He always has that. Yeah.
It's more designed. It's more complicated.
What color is pants, Jeff?
Khaki.
surprised you knew his vest was red.
What does that mean?
I'm really mad that his new outfit is so cool.
He doesn't deserve that outfit.
I'm so
confused. His new outfit is the coolest of all the new outfits, and I'm just upset.
I guess it's cool. I don't know. I was like, whatever, Marcus.
It's too cool for a 14-year-old.
It's too cool for, like, I don't really buy that he has this much fashion sense.
Right? Like, well, going from what he was...
on him. He didn't think so. That's what I'm saying.
It looks like he's going to enter the Street Fighter tournament.
Yeah, he kind of does. But it still looks like normal person clothes, which is impressive for Digimon.
Yeah, it's not like a flame jacket. or whatever Yoli had, the like fighter pilot outfit.
We don't go back there.
This looks like something you could buy out of a normal store with appealing to normal people.
Well, maybe like slightly outdated normal people.
From 2005 or 6?
Oh, yeah. It's your Jeffrey.
Definitely looks like 2005. Jeff, what are you doing?
I snuck in a mini Yoli into the dock.
Why would you do that? For Yoli.
Yoli looks like she belongs in like some Akira Toriyama design video game.
You're a little right. bit there.
Okay, okay. Right. So moving on to Yoshi. Her old outfit was like a short sleeve top.
That's a halter top.
A halter top pink with blue jeans that were like 3/4 length.
Those are called capris.
Yeah. Capri Sun.
You could have called them 3/4 length. Like, it's okay.
Unleash.
You know what you mean.
No, wait, that's Sunny D.
And her new outfit, she doesn't wear pants anymore. She just has underwear that looks like jeans.
What are you talking about? She's wearing jean shorts.
I know. They're tiny. They're tiny jean shorts. But mainly, I think...
They're actually not as tiny as they could be.
Yeah. I was like, that's actually, like, it's reasonable length.
Not at school.
Well, she's too old for school.
Yeah, she's too old
for
school.
She's nice, first of all.
but mainly, I think what's more distinctive about her the top that's underneath her jacket isn't really noticeable. I don't even know what color it is.
It's very important, though.
The jacket is important.
The jacket is important. Yeah.
She would be a splat on the ground.
Because of that great sequence where she throws a barrel at a Gizmon.
Oh, my God. Why? Yoshi, why?
Why indeed?
Why wasn't she Digivice? I don't understand.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any... Okay.
Attack
they just really want to have her throw a barrel? I don't understand.
No, okay, wait,
I liked that moment. Nothing leading up to it or after it justified it.
Or made sense.
Yes.
Wait, then Attack on Titan ripped it off.
Sure. I don't think Attack on Titan ripped this off. But
yes, it did.
I had a couple...
Totally did.
On a related note, the episode, I thought there was a lot of weird stylistic diversity in these episodes, in animation and the direction.
It was great.
So that one, I mean, I'll get to that episode, but there was the episode 29, the one with the dojo. All the Digimon had much thicker lines out of the blue. And I kind of really like that style. I don't know why they should do it more often. And then episode 31, the one with Nanami and versus Toma, I thought had lots of kind of like
a lot of shading.
I had a lot of shading and a lot of like interesting camera angles that weren't normally used. And I thought it was
like a film noir.
I think it was just more intimate and more like dark and edgier a little bit. And so like
no, but it's like a film noir which uses a lot of shadows on shots.
I think you're like over analyzing that a little, and I know you're a film major. I agree more with Jeff here.
And then the episode with Yoshi versus Ivan was just so fan service. Like, it wasn't fully fan servicey. We haven't gotten to the moment yet where like Rosemond's boobs jiggle a ton. I don't know what the dub does with that. Andrew, do you know? Does
that
the dub
happens?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
I'm not sure how the dub handles it though. If it does anything to that.
There was at least one shot of boobs that I just wrote down boobs in that episode.
But how did you spell it? How did you spell boobs?
B-O-O-B-S.
Okay, I'm glad we did this segment. Okay.
8008 S5.
So this episode didn't feel like so exploitative with fanservice, but the whole segment I thought was like, you know, ends with, like, it involves her falling, so that it's not actually a panty shot because her clothes doesn't have panties visible when you go up her skirt or whatever. But it felt like it was doing that. Like there were points where like you would look up her, like, when she's falling upside down and you're looking like through her thighs as she's falling.
Oh, that's not the moment I was like. There's a moment where Lalamon still got her by the by her top, not the jacket, but the shirt, and she's like pulling it in such a way that, like, I mean, it's not showing boobs or a bra, but it is showing a lot of like skin that is not normally shown on kids media or in polite company, and I was like, this is so unnecessary.
Yeah, I feel like that whole sequence, and the whole sequence is really smoothly animated in a way that made me feel like
it was
like really well animated, but in a way that made me feel a bit gross. It was like, it wasn't like, you know, I don't think it was like explicitly showing like her boobs jiggling a ton, but it was just like, this is like, it was almost like, felt a little bit like, not like trying to be like, oh, isn't this like smooth? Like it was kind, I don't know. I think it was also just the effect of clearly spending tons of effort animating this smooth sequence that was showing off this girl in this way. And I say girl, she is older than any of the Digimon protagonists, but to us, not 19-year-old.
10 years younger.
Yeah.
She's 9 years younger than me.
Mm. All right. But I guess I don't know. It's inappropriate. It feels weird in Digimon.
It's weird anywhere. That whole episode was massively uncomfortable.
Yeah.
There were a lot of sexual innuendos happening in that dialogue, I feel.
In the dialogue?
In the dialogue and in the whole thing. And it was played for laughs, which did not make any of it better. It minimized like real troubling dynamics.
Hmm. Yeah.
Not a fan of that episode.
One line that I wrote down was, I'll teach you that size doesn't matter. Like, come on.
Why?
And then it goes on to, unless we're talking about the size of someone's heart. And I'm like, come on.
It even goes on further, but I couldn't catch it.
Well, that's the theory anyway.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, your words say no, but your heart says yes. Okay. Shut up.
Yeah. So what I wrote down was like, I guess the main, I was like, is this problematic? Because I wasn't sure, because I'm like, he's clearly vilified for these actions. But I think the main problem is that it's making light of the situation. It's making it to a comedic thing, as if it's not like a real concern that women face. And if it is, you just laugh it off when that's not the case at all.
Right.
But in the context of the term, she doesn't laugh it off. She like decimates him.
I still have issues with it, particularly in the way that she does it. First of all, this is going back to something that's been a theme throughout Digimon since season one that I keep bringing up, in that women have to suffer to do anything, where it's not like the effort equals reward that it is for the guys. It's more the suffering merits you a reward. So that, I think that was still at play here. And the other thing is that Rosemond has to get naked to be
seen. That attack.
Yeah, I was like, are you getting naked
several
and then your
times.
Attack is forbidden temptation? What is happening right now?
Yeah, that attack is lots of stuff wrong with it.
It's like, it's awful to start with, and it's awful in that context.
Hmm. Another weird angle to the gender stuff is that So something that we haven't really gotten in other seasons of Digimon, because I don't think this is ever included in the like streaming releases of Digimon, and I don't know why it's included in this one, but there are, if at least getting it on YouTube and iTunes, there are the previews for the next episode included at the end of the episode, which I'm not used to seeing in English very much for stuff like this on streaming
platforms. It's only done in the season.
What?
I mean,
the previews?
But I mean, I guess the other seasons didn't have anything like that at the end of the episode. So I guess
The only time you ever saw the next episode was in like the Fox Kid commercials.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, the commercials, and those were different. Those weren't like quite the same format. So anyway, it's pretty similar to the Japanese style, which is included in, you know, if you watch anime on Crunchyroll, whatever nowadays. So I'm pretty used to that from a Japanese perspective. And then, so anyway, what I'm trying to say is that I compared the preview for the for the Ocean episode, the Japanese and English versions, and it is wildly different. Like, because it's not like the show where they like, take the same material and then choose how to redub it. They take totally different segments and like highlight very different things. So for most of the episodes, it's not like they're always choosing different content, but it's usually like, okay, it's just a different slice in the episode. And it's like the Japanese ones tend to be a bit more less concerned with spoilers. Like they'll, you know, like have stuff from the end of the episode, where the English ones will be more like the stuff at the beginning of the episode. But for the Yoshino one, it was like the English version only highlighted stuff from the end of the episode that was like about the bomb or the gate bomb thing.
Oh, really?
And didn't mention like Yoshino or like the Ivan coming to attack Yoshino or whatever at all. Whereas the Japanese version was all about that. And so it was like, At first I was like, oh, this is better. They're cutting out the, like, they're not highlighting the problematic gross stuff. But then later I was like, no, they're just cutting out the girl stuff. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, either way, the episode is bad, so, like, there's no way to make the preview good.
Yeah.
They were screwed no matter what they did.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, like, I found it funny on some level. Like, there was, like, the part where he's attacking with elaborate names, like, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but, you know, like, they're like, let's go on a date on the park attack, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's still manipulative and not comfortable.
Mm.
Especially in this, especially looking at it in this year.
No, I mean, it's a perennial problem.
I know.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, moving on from Yoshino to Thomas. Thomas's new outfit is just...
Mm. No, I actually think it's an improvement over his dumb green t-shirt.
So his old outfit was just a green t-shirt with a... light
V-neck.
Pants.
It's a V-neck.
Oh, sorry. Yes. A V-neck, not a t-shirt. Sorry.
It's very important because I hate that V-neck. I hate so much.
Hate V-mon, hate V-neck.
I don't hate V-mon. V-mon's fine.
But his new outfit is a white button-down shirt with a blue tie and a little... Okay, now I need help with color. A little vest.
It's a green vest.
Green vest, okay.
Okay, his vest is too small, and what is wrong with his tie?
I don't know what's wrong with his tie. This is
a
thing.
That is a very weird tie, and I wear ties.
Yeah, I prefer his V-neck. I'm sorry, Ashley.
No, you're wrong. That's fine.
We can disagree.
To be honest, neither of these outfits is, like, killer, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
Bad choices.
I don't really mind the V-neck, but it doesn't really feel like a thing that Thomas would wear. His butler does, clearly.
What?
I assume his butler, like, physically dresses him in his sleep.
His butler definitely dresses better than he does.
But not just his clothes... I feel like his arc in these episodes was surprisingly plausible. I didn't really expect it to be.
Why not?
Well, I guess this is more plausible than arcs like this. The arc I'm really talking about is his basically getting frustrated that he's like overlooked for Marcus. And it wasn't like a 0-1 kind of thing. It was a plausible situation, first of all, they were in, that like he would be a tactical mind in that situation. Like, none of this felt really forced. It was like he would be a tactical mind in that situation. They would be praising, okay, I guess it was a little bit forced how much they adored Marcus for everything he said. Even things he didn't say, they you know, praised him for. That was a little bit forced. But I feel like it was mostly earned. And then him being okay with that, but just being a little frustrated. And then like needing in the battle to use Marcus's whatever style approach to win, and then like being haunted by the fact that he had to do that. Although the dub of the line when Nanami doesn't die, whatever, but has her final line or whatever, and she's like, I forget exactly how it was worded, but it was like,
she lost to Marcus Damon's power.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then she's Thomas,
like, I accept defeat not because I lost to you, but because I lost to Marcus Damon's power, or something like that.
Yeah. But then Marcus is like,
threw stuff across the room in anger.
I did.
Yes.
Oh,
I assume you hated her bringing up Marcus again.
I mean, I hated it in that moment, but then like the moment immediately after, I was like, Nanami just lay the most killer blow on Thomas she possibly could have. That's what makes me like Nanami. She did not lose.
But I did not follow her, whatever. Okay, I didn't follow her logic.
I have theories about that. Part of it's going to depend on like what happens in the next arc, because we have not seen the end of this, whatever Thomas is going through. But like, yeah, I think Jeff has part of it in that Thomas had to use Marcus's like idiot strategy. Mm. But I think the other part of it actually is that Marcus's power is to bring strengths out of other people, which I don't know, I think is BS, but like is to strengthen people's bonds. Like Thomas was a loner before all this. Now he has friends. He has things he cares about. That's what sets him apart from Nanami. And that's what makes him win. He was willing to risk himself. He used his brains to know that she would not attack him. But he still had to be willing to be that reckless. And he was that reckless because he had to win for his friends, for the things he wanted to stand up for. And that is Marcus's power, is to inspire that in other people. I don't think Marcus actually has that power, but the show wants us to think he does.
Okay. I was like, wow, Asher just laid out like a massive defense of Marcus and his strengths.
I hate him. But like the show wants us to think that. Especially with the boys anyway. It's so annoying. I'm so frustrated with Marcus. I'm so frustrated with Digimon's chauvinism.
Well, I wanted to complain about something adjacent to all that, because I really like that reading of it, but I kind of, I think your reading of it kind of reduces my complaint on this regard, but I thought it was pretty clear in the moment that like that's what she was referring to, him being reckless, like using a Marcus tactic. And so when he was like, what did she mean by using Marcus's power? What did she mean? I was like, what? It was clear what she meant. It was so obvious. And like, it's understandable that you're haunted by it and like you're frustrated and you're like, oh, wait, I didn't win on my own merit. I won by like borrowing someone else's tactic. And like, have I lost myself to this? Like I'm losing myself in these friendships I formed.
That could be valid too.
Well, so I went back and watched it in the Japanese version, and yeah, that like what did she mean is not there. It's like him being like, I forget exactly what the line is, but it's more akin of like, oh, it's like, why do I feel so irritated now? I came into this prepared to be like, oh, this is so stupid, there's no reading of the English version that makes any sense, but I'm like, it actually does make sense. Like, if there's more to it,
like, then I like my reading of the English version better, right, than the Japanese version better.
Right
The Japanese version, that makes me think of Matt and Ty all over again. And Matt and Ty is far superior. It's awesome, Marcus.
And I guess it's kind of adjacent to all this, but the stuff before that episode or early in it, beginning of it, when Thomas is, like, he's used to being in an organization where he's respected based on seniority and intellect and all these objective measures or whatever. And being in a situation where he's like, here is the best strategy. I've laid out its merits. Here is why is the best, like, logic. Here's my logic. Here's my rationale. And they're all like, but this other person had more charisma, so we're going to go with him. And he's like, what? I don't understand. What is up with this?
I'm fully on Thomas's side here.
I mean, I'm on his side. I mean, like, how frustrating that is. But I think it's a good lesson to learn that, like, marketing is important and, like, charisma is important. It needs to be able to sell that information well.
True. It was realistic in a depressing way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's so, that's what it is. It's, when that many lives are on the line and they go with Marcus's stupid idea. It's like, Marcus, it's been 30 episodes. Why have you not learned a single thing in 30 episodes? Thomas now. Why aren't you listening to him?
Yeah,
he tries to justify it as like, no, it's okay, because Thomas will do the thing that Thomas was going to do, and Thomas is great, so it's fine, right?
Yeah,
he says it at some point.
Yoshi says it first, and then Marcus like confirms it in his internal monologue, or to Kenan or something.
Yeah, to Kenan.
But there are how many of them? Five of them, counting Kenan and Shima. They needed all the manpower they could get, and here's Marcus and Kenan running off into the trap that they know is a trap, that Thomas told them is a trap. And like, you could have been more strategically used somewhere else.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why Eldradimon is dead now.
Oops.
Yeah, that's kind of like, they all, again, I think it's totally true, like, because Marcus hasn't learned to defer at all. Like, I think there's room for him to be like, have some of his hot-headedness without being like, I'm just going to completely ignore him and then be like, oh, whatever, it's fine. There's a big space in between there. And at the end of this episode, the end of these arc, the end of these episodes, the end of the arc, they're like, oh no, we lost. I guess we all just suck. And I'm like, no, you had the power. You just like didn't listen to the most rational. And now I'm thinking about it. I'm like, maybe this does lead into the next arc pretty well. In that regard.
I don't actually remember the next arc.
I mean, I don't remember outside of the broad strokes.
Yeah, I think I've seen the next episode and I have no memory of what happens after that.
Stuff.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, but that's an interesting light to look at. That like they lose this big battle, this big loss for them in the war, mainly because they didn't really listen to Thomas.
Yeah.
Do we have anything to say about Keenan?
He's great. He's a good kid.
He was so...
He wasn't there much.
Yeah. This was a weird, like... I feel like they had to, like, shuffle him off to, like... I don't know what... I guess the main reason is because they need to delay his mega evolution to later to make a bigger deal about it later.
Oh, he gets one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah, he gets, like, two more.
What?
So I guess in that sense, it was like they shuffled him off because I guess, you know, like Thomas and Yoshino being around for the Mega Evolutions in some ways like reduced the importance of them. So in that sense, I guess it's good that they, you know, delayed until later. But it also was like so implausible that they never talk with him. He never like expresses any like, oh, you have Mega Evolution now? Oh, can I do that? Because apparently it's just a like thought process and like realizing your emotions and stuff. So like theoretically they could explain it to him and he could unlock it.
I mean, how old is he? 10?
He's a baby.
I doubt that he, okay. I didn't think he'd be able to. Apparently I'm incorrect. It's actually a fairly difficult thing to understand like what you want. Like that's a big thing. Mm. Adults go their whole life. They go to therapy for this.
I should go to therapy for this.
To unlock my mega evolution.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can unlock my mega.
You gotta be your best self.
So I don't know. Keenan, it's weird to be like, oh, he's the fourth member of the team. Like last arc, it's like his importance was strictly increasing. And then it's weird for this arc to be like, oh, and he just like disappears without any fanfare, presumably to do something important to the plot is the reason he says he's going off. And then it becomes so inconsequential. It's like, it is in some ways, like we joked in the recap, recreating the Mimi moment of Mimi coming up with the army, but much less important. And like, that one wasn't that important to the plot anyway. Like it wasn't like that was what secured the victory. It was through Magna Angemon or whatever, but it still felt like a big victory and like a big surprise here. It's just like, okay, that's what you're doing? Sure.
Marukimon told him to do it, okay?
I guess so.
He's just doing what Marukimon wants.
I want to talk about something which I am referring to as the way of the Bancho. And I mean, I just want to talk about the Japanese word Bancho, since it's in Bancho Leomon, and some other things that made me think of related words and some Japanese, you know, etymology, and how that really affects on the series. Even though we're not watching the Japanese version, but, you know, it's clear there in the character details and everything. So Bancho Leomon, the Bancho in his name. Did they in the dub give an explanation for what it means? I forget if they said like if it meant something. So. You do think so?
I don't think so.
Okay. So it's just like any other Digimon name where it's just like there as background detail. It's not important. But the word Bancho means a leader of a group of juvenile delinquents. So it's basically Marcus, in case that wasn't clear from their like odd mutual crush on each other or whatever's going on there. Which I don't think in the Japanese version it's quite so weird. Marcus being like, be my friend.
But also let me punch you in the face.
That's what friends do.
That's
you're
right.
Yeah,
the way
the
Bancho.
So
or Matt and Ty.
But so
it's actually
the,
not the way Ty. It's definitely more the actual juvenile delinquent culture in Japan.
Yeah.
Or at least the old juvenile delinquent culture. I don't know how it is now.
We'll get into that a little bit. But so in the Japanese version, if you're watching, if you were like a Japanese viewer and everything, this wouldn't be the first time you've heard Bancho thrown around, because so the word that like in what we're used to hearing as Marcus referring to himself as the ultimate fighter, what he typically says in Japanese is Nihon Ichi no, or anyway, he says like Japan's Kenka Bancho, fighting leader. He's saying Kenka Bancho. And so this is exactly how Marcus has been, or Masaru refers to himself. So this is from the Wikipedia article for Bancho. And okay. In Japan, in the 20th century, the term refers to a leader of juvenile delinquents in middle and high schools. The typical image of a Bancho is an uncouth fighter who has a strong sense of gang honor, just just like Marcus or Masaru. In reality, though, bansho were becoming increasingly rare in the 1970s, and by the 1980s, the term was relatively old-fashioned. Vestiges of the word still remained, though, such as in the nicknames for baseball players Kazuhiro Kiyohara and Daisuke Miura. By the end of the 20th century, the term almost did not exist at all, though groups of delinquents who committed crimes began to stand out. The term became a title of honor for people with leadership personalities and who stood against tough elements, and in turn, the negative connotation of the word diminished. It also became a scornful term for people who had a great deal of bravado. On the other hand, in the manga world, due to the backlash, a genre called bansho manga has been created, with there being various types of bansho. So yeah, I think it seems like it's like been on the decline. It's not really a thing in Japanese culture anymore, but it's become a part of manga and anime culture. So
I think that's the real Japan culture.
Yeah, that's the real Japan.
Oh my gosh.
Anime Japan. So yeah, it's a little bit strange to have like this, basically this like concept that is Marcus as a Digimon, like the Leomon form of Marcus. It's a little strange. But
smarter, wiser Leomon form of Marcus.
But the other things that thinking about the meaning of bansho reminded me of. So the kanji that make up the word bansho, there's the first part is ban, the second part is cho. And that cho kanji is actually pretty common. On its own, it means leader, superior, senior. But the places where it's used in a lot of like leadership roles, leadership titles. So Yushima is, what do they call him in English? He's like the, they say he's like the highest ranking DATS member or whatever. Yeah. But his title in Japanese is shocho, which is chief or head of office laboratory. Samson is taicho, which is commanding officer. Hashiba, the government dude who is like, you know, like had been convinced by Kurata or whatever, comes in occasionally. He is chokan, which is like a secretary, like a secretary of state secrets or something. So this like this cho term is pretty common in all these different leadership roles. And I think it's like having bansho stand next to it is like it's a different kind of leadership. It's like these like I guess like these different ideals for what a leader can be. And so you have all the like all these different high ranking DATS members and bansho Leomon. And in contrast to all those, Kurata, I think Kurata stands in stark contrast to them because he's like, he's not a leader. He's not, he's kind of like using his subordinates to manipulate people. You know, like he convinces everyone to go on the DATS mission in the last arc, take down Marukimon, and like uses the fact that he's not leading it to worm everyone into it. And the way he's like convincing Hashiba and stuff to do things manipulatively, like he's like the anti-cho, the anti-dot-dot-cho. And I think that's an interesting contrast, interesting way of like thinking about bansho as just being one of these many different types of leadership, and Kurata being like the antithesis to that is interesting. And the last place where I thought about or noticed cho in Digimon is in the way the rookie stage in Japanese. It's usually translated in English as child, but the Japanese, it's actually seicho. It's like seicho ki, which is like growth period. And so that cho in seicho is like, it's like becoming leader or becoming grown or whatever, becoming adult. And so it's kind of like, I think in some ways the way that Marcus refers to himself as bansho is like, he's still in that growth period. Like with the kanji meaning like becoming growth, he's like, he's in the middle of becoming growth, or not becoming growth, becoming leadership. He's becoming it and he's not there yet. Whereas bansho Leomon, it's like, it's in his name. It's just like a part of who he is intrinsically. And Marcus is not there at all. It's like he's still like posing and trying to get there. So, yeah.
Hey, Marcus, you found the Digimon kindred spirit.
Found his senpai.
Yeah, it's senpai. His bansho senpai.
His bansho senpai.
And like, as I say all that, I'm like, all the stuff that I found interesting about bansho and like where Marcus sees himself and what he like considers the ultimate ideal and this like Digimon idealization of that or whatever, and none of it engages with the things that Ash found frustrating. And I'm like, I feel bad like digging into this because I'm like, it's still like Marcus is still like super frustrating and like chauvinistic and not and rewarded for things that are terrible and all this stuff. And
that's because Marcus is Marcus Damon.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Oh boy.
I guess the last thing I want to talk about in terms of bansho is that something that not everyone, I'm not sure if our other hosts here know about it, and I assume there are some listeners who haven't either, but there's this whole, bansho Leomon isn't the only bansho Digimon. There's a whole team of bansho Digimon.
A series just of them.
So the other, that would also involve another team of Digimon going after them.
Okay, so the other Digimon in the team, the other Digimon in the Bancho line are Bancho Golemon, Bancho Lulimon, Bancho Mamemon, Bancho Stingmon. Bancho Stingmon's my favorite, but Bancho Lulimon's also pretty cool. Bancho Stingmon's just awesome. Bancho Stingron!
Stingmon.
Sting!
You sounded pretty close to yourself there, actually.
Yeah.
Bancho Mamemon?
Bancho Mamemon is, like, cool. It's hard to compete with Bancho Lulimon and Bancho Stingmon, though.
Yeah, Bancho Lulimon. Dig it.
And, yeah, so, like Andrew was alluding to, there's this, like, lore to the Bancho Digimon that, like, they're being chased by... it's weird. They're being chased, like, the thing that Koki turns into when he's Mega Bio Dark Dramon, the non-bio version of that is the thing they're being chased by, which is also Bancho Liamon and Dark Dramon combined to make Chaosmon, which is like Omegamon, but with two other Digimon as bases. It's weird. That's all I got for Bancho.
Why does he chase the Bancho?
Because they're evil?
But why him?
Weird.
I don't know. It's Digimon lore.
Digimon.
Okay. It's the lore that never is brought up in anything except, like, text.
Yeah. Welcome to Game Show Gatai, our game show segment. It's pretty self-explanatory, except for what Gatai means, which I won't explain now. Our current score, Asher is in fourth place with 15 points, and Drew is in second place with 37. Ashley is in second place with 102, and Jeffrey is in first place with 152. We will start off with two lightning questions to decide who gets to go into the Digi-Feud round. So, lightning question number uno one, Hitotsu Ichi. Who would enjoy The Last Jedi the most? Marcus, Yoshino, Thomas, or Kenan? Everyone has 3 seconds to answer. Oh, haven't seen it yet. Okay. but that's okay. Not everyone who answered has seen it. Okay, so everyone have to go around and say what we guess. I'll guess Kenan. Ashley.
I'll also say Kenan.
Andrew.
Marcus.
Asher.
Kenan.
Okay, the correct answer was Marcus.
What?
I figured youngest, but I guess it's not it.
Yeah.
Not the youngest.
Marcus. He's the warrior guy. I guess Marcus is too. There's too many girls in Last Jedi for Marcus.
Oh, sick burn. And,
well, I don't know if there are too many girls, but like it's definitely has a theme of a very anti-Marcus theme.
There are still people in it that are like Marcus that I feel are sufficiently rewarded for their
maybe. Okay, so now we're going to guess the percentages. So now we need to guess the percentage Price is Right style rules that Marcus got in the polls. Price is Right style rules. I hate re-explaining this every time, so let's just do it. I hope we all remember how to do it. So okay, I start off with the lowest that we can say is 25%. I'll say 40%. Ashley.
30.
Andrew.
42.
Okay.
Asher.
I will guess 25.
Okay. The correct answer is 40. Oh, whoa.
Whoa.
What?
Whoa.
I was like, it's not going to be a round number. All right. Second lightning question.
That's BS. Okay.
Second lightning question. Who would be the most opposed to net neutrality in an open internet? Devimon, Edamon, Myotismon, or Piedmon? Okay. So I don't get to do any of the guesses now, so it's just the three of you. So, okay. Guess number one winner, Ashley.
Devimon?
Andrew.
Edamon?
Asher.
Why isn't Datamon on here?
It's the main villains. Come on.
All right.
Okay. Correct answer is Edamon.
Yes. Two in a row.
So just Andrew for both of those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And now the three of you should guess the percentage. The, again, lowest number is 25%. So Ashley.
30.
Andrew.
31.
Asher.
32.
I wonder who won. It was 44, so yay! Asher wins.
Yay! Woo!
All right. So Digi-Feud round one. Round one Digi-Feud is me versus Asher.
Yay!
So who?
I don't think we've ever faced off.
Oh, huh.
So this is Digi-Feud. It's Jeff versus Asher. We have basically
unprecedented.
Unprecedented Jeff versus Asher. Maybe Asher will get some points. Who knows?
You can't let Jeff.
Come on. You can do it, Asher. All right.
I don't think I'm good at this part, though.
Anyway,
well, I know I'm not.
We've stolen Family Feud's rules. There are five answers on the board. There's a question. They'll buzz in initially. Whoever gets the highest answer that's on the board after buzzing in gets to either play or pass the question, and they try to fill in the board and get all the points. Whatever.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
Cool. So are you ready for the question, my friends?
Do it.
You shall buzz in with your mouths if okay. you have an answer. All right. The question is, who is the most attractive villain in Digimon seasons 1 through 4?
Bzzz.
Oh. Well, I heard Jeff first, so.
Okay. Myotismon.
Ding, ding, ding. Third, though.
Oh.
So Asher gets to, you get to guess. Maybe time you out.
It was seasons 1 through 4. Yeah, season 1 through 4. Okay.
Seasons 1 through 4. That's so many villains.
Pick one. I'm timing you out. You're done. You're done. No. Jeff, do you want to play your pass?
I think I'll. I want to play, but Ash hesitated so long.
No. Go ahead, Jeff. Oh, no,
that's the thing. If you want me to play, I don't know if I want to play. I think I'll play.
Okay.
Okay.
Who is the most attractive villain in Digimon season 1 through 4?
Ken.
Yes. Second.
Ooh, okay.
You guys tied Ken with Myotismon?
Apparently. I don't know, man.
I feel bad for Ken.
I feel bad for Ken.
Okay. So three more on the board still.
Yes.
And a number one up
there.
I'm counting now. One.
I don't think enough people would have written in Black War Game One's butt, so I'm not gonna say that.
And more seconds.
Haru Kenimon.
Yeah, we'll give him that answer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's fair.
The board says Haru Kenimon parentheses human. Okay, two more. Piedmon.
Ugh, wrong.
Okay. Okay.
One strike.
Ooh. Lady Devimon.
Yeah. Number one.
Oh, really?
Numero uno.
You're not dinging.
Ding, ding, ding.
So there's a big delay there.
Whatever.
Oh, okay. One more. Oof. Who even else is there? I don't think. Like, there aren't any.
I don't know, but you only have 10 more seconds.
Attractive Digimon in season 3? Season 4 had Lucimon.
Damn, wrong. I meant You're very wrong.
Okay, one more, Jeff.
Okay, yeah, okay. If you had Lucimon like thought ammo, that would have counted, right?
Yeah, you're just wrong. Okay.
It could be someone from season 4 though.
Crusadermon.
Okay,
who'd you say?
Crusadermon.
That's wrong.
Okay.
Asher, you have one opportunity to steal to get the last, to steal all of the points. All of them, Asher.
Oh, don't do this to me. This is some pressure. Am I timed still?
No.
I'm giving
it. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll 20 seconds starting now.
Okay. Ranamon.
Oh, Ash, no.
Was it Yamaki? I don't know.
No, it was Beelzemon.
Why would I ever remember that?
Why would you ever remember Beelzemon?
Yes.
Because he's the best? I wouldn't have thought of him as being attractive in that way, though.
So. Friggin' Jeffrey gets a kajillion points.
All right. Now we're going to play two more lightning questions for the prediction jurisdiction round. Lightning question number one, number three. Lightning question number three. Who would you want to spend the holidays with? Marcus, Yoshino, Thomas, or Keenan? Okay. So I will guess Keenan, Asher. 3 seconds.
Yoshi.
Andrew.
Thomas.
Ashley.
Thomas.
Correct answer was Yoshi.
What? Yes!
Garbage.
I want my little baby Keenan for Christmas.
Thomas could buy you so many more presents.
She would give you so much.
He would, but he would be in you'd have to spend the whole day with him.
That's fine.
Doing things he wants to do?
What did he want to do? It seemed fine.
He wanted to do way too much is what he wanted
it's
to
fine.
Do.
And too fancy.
He just wanted to sleep and be chill. Like, Yoshi's chill.
Whatever.
Yoshi's chill All island. Right. Okay, percentage.
Jeffrey.
So, winner was Yoshi. Lowest we can go is 25%. All right, I will guess 25. Asher?
26.
Andrew?
55.
What?
Ashley?
I was going to say 27.
It was 31.
Yeah.
Ashley wins.
No, Ashley. You know, I don't think it works, Jeffrey, when you remind us how there is a minimum threshold.
Why not?
There's only four answers.
Yeah, I know, but I think you should let people make the mistake. Have fun this way.
I agree with that. All right. The second lightning question is our perennial.
I'm so glad I don't have to do this.
Okay, so it is our perennial question. Which is the better dad's computer operator, Miki, Whoa. Purple hair, or Megumi, blonde hair? All right, so
is
interesting
it
guess.
Miki?
I guess Miki. Asher?
Miki.
Andrew?
Miki.
It was Miki. Also, wait, I should have mentioned we do, when we ask the question to listeners, and while we look at it now, we have the past history. So Miki has gone, I'm just going to say Miki's, and you know it's the 100 minus that. Starting at 501 to 504 has gone from 64, took a little dip to 59, then back up to 71, and then even higher to 76. So Miki's been on the rise, Megumi's been on the decline. Now we have to guess percentages. So last one, again, was Miki at 76. So now I have to guess what she got this time. Lowest is 50.
Just don't.
I'll guess 76. Asher?
I will guess 77.
Andrew?
I will guess 78.
Oh, I thought you were going to go crazy fools. Again.
Yeah, I think we all guessed too high.
Probably.
It was 70.
So I guess Jeff wins.
I get to play myself, and I auto-win all the points.
Yeah, I think in that case, we have to... The lowest point person wins.
Yeah, that's what we did last time this happened. So, welcome to Prediction Jurisdiction, where our two contestants, Jeff and Ashley, guess the answer their friend, partner, person said to the following question. The question is, how would you rank the first five main partner Digimon? And those five are Tai's Agumon, Vimon, Gilmon, Agunimon, and Marcus's Agumon. All right, Jeff, you're up first.
All right.
How do you think Ashley rated these guys?
All right, definitely Gilmon first. Here's where it gets tricky. The other 80% is question.
Right.
I think she put Marcus's Agumon at the bottom. So number two, I'd say Vimon. Number three, Tai Agumon. Number four, Gunimon. And number five, Marcus Agumon.
Yeah, so you got one right.
Oh, it was just Gilmon?
Yeah.
You made the fatal mistake of thinking that I put Marcus's Agumon last. Otherwise, you had everybody else in the correct order.
Oh, yeah. What?
It's true, actually.
Wait, where was?
Good job, Jeff.
Where was Marcus's Agumon?
I put him second.
Two.
What?
I don't like Marcus, but his Agumon is cool.
But his nostrils.
Oh, but his nostrils do suck. But, like, his personality doesn't suck.
did you forget about his nostrils when you filled this in?
Yeah. I really want to ask if Brian Beacock, like, ad-libbed a bunch of those lines because they're amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Ashley, you ready to guess for Jeff?
I'm going to get zero, but yeah. Oof. Jeff's ranking of these Digimon. So hard. Because I don't know what he would put first. I have no basis of what...
You totally have a basis.
Just do it. Like, you can't do that much worse than Jeff. He only got one.
I can get zero right, and that's
you
like
you get okay. zero right, and like that's not that much worse.
Cool. I actually think Jeff puts Marcus's Agumon first. Oh boy, and then Gilmon. Okay, where did this other three go? I assume he puts, oh, who does he like more, Vimon or Goonimon? I assume he also puts a Goonimon last. Ties Agumon third, Vimon fourth.
So you've gotten one.
You also got one.
Which one was it? Vimon.
It was Vimon. So
Jeff by random chance.
Yeah.
Jeff put Guillemon first. Oh. And Marcus's Agumon second. Agunimon third, Vimon fourth, which you got, and then Taiza Agumon fifth.
So basically
he wrote Tai Agunimon
first. Yeah, I did. And then he was like, wait, crap.
So what he really wants is for Tai to be the protagonist in season four, which actually would be very interesting.
Cool. Wait, so how did our own answers of our own selves, were they really similar?
Well, we both had Guillemon and Marcus.
Yeah, you had Guillemon first, Marcus Agumon second, and then after that it's all jumbled.
Oh, okay.
I didn't trust you to put Guillemon first.
All right, well, now that you guys prove how little you know each other's taste in pro tag partners, are you ready for the double or nothing bonus question where, like, you could, like, lose all your points or get all of them?
I'm doubled. Ready to say no to it.
You ready to say no to it?
Yeah.
Well, first I'm offering
say,
it.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes because I didn't get that many points, so I don't really care if I lose all of them.
Yeah, it's not a huge risk. So Ashley's going for it. Jeff, you're saying no?
Yep.
Okay. Ashley, you ready?
I think. Let me think.
All right.
Well, see, I'm trying to debate how much Jeff has trolled the question. Like, if he's trolled it in multiple levels.
Actually, there's only two answers to this question. You ready? You already know what this question is. I'm going to tell you. Who is better, Miki or Megumi?
Yeah. Okay. So.
Honestly, this is easy if we go by last episode.
Yeah, but do you think any of us remember last
episode? No, because I'm pretty sure Jeff was like, I trolled it and I put Megumi just to throw you off. But does that mean that he put Miki this time?
No more hints to anyone.
Uh-huh.
How predictable is Jeff?
I'm going to say he put Megumi. Did he pick Megumi or not?
He picked Megumi.
Yes, he did.
Because he wanted to subvert the answer again.
So, cool. 10 points for Ashley. Woo! Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay, so now with the total number of points, Andrew got a bunch of points from Lightning Questions, got 15 points. Asher got 10 points for Lightning Questions. Ashley got 0 points for Lightning Questions, but 10 points from the prediction round. And I got 75. This game really is rigged.
Yeah.
No shit.
Every time we play, it's really time consuming. When we play Lightning Question, I'm like, I'm going to pick a random number and hope I lose. And it's like, that's exactly the number. So the total is now, I have 227, Ashley's 112, Andrew's 47, Asher's 30.
Oh no, Asher's catching up to me.
You can't let him do that. Andrew.
It's true,
I'm kind of upset that I have points at all now. Like, it was a matter of pride at one point.
Jeff forced you to have points by giving
Lightning
Question.
What the hell?
It's like, now I'm not even losing spectacularly. I'm just losing.
Some of the funny answers to the Digi feud were, to the question was like, most attractive villain. Some of the answers were Gigasmon, Machinedramon, Mother D-Reaper, and Terry Bradshaw.
Okay.
Terry Bradshaw.
All right, now we have a question inspired by Patreon Tamer Theory. So his question that prompted this was, combining with Digimon has been a part of the show since season 3. Which format of the process do you prefer? Biomerging, spirit evolution, or biohybrids?
What's the difference between biomerging and spirit evolution?
Biomerging is season 3.
The two Digimon combining.
Actually, did you watch the show?
That's DNA Digivolution.
No, I was right. What?
No.
Biomerging is Takato and Guillemon fusing to become whatever that guy is called. Dukemon. Yeah, that.
Why are they different terms?
They're different seasons. There's different power levels involved. And I think different, like, One is a human and a Digimon really becoming one entity, while Spirit Evolution is more like the humans taking on this persona, actually. Like, thinking of it as a persona is actually like a...
It's plot armor.
Yeah.
It's literal and, like, plot armor.
The Legendary Warriors do apparently have, like, historical personalities, but it doesn't really play that much into the show.
Except the historical personalities get messed up anyway.
I mean, whatever.
But Spirit Evolving and Bioemerging are totally, they're not even similar concepts. Spirit Evolving and Biohybrids are at least structurally fairly equivalent in that it's like a human becoming a Digimon, powering up but for an evolution, then coming back.
Circumstances are super different.
Yeah, circumstances, like, the engineering involved, the like injection of DNA and whatever.
The killing of Digimon for it. Like, I don't think, do any of us want to be Biohybrids? Like, first of all.
Well, so
do any of us like this concept?
My answer to it is, like, Biohybrids are the most interesting and thought-provoking of the three concepts. They present the most questions that I'm curious to explore, but...
I think they all present questions.
But Bioemerging is, it's too, like, fan wish fulfillment for me. Like, it's really? Like... Because it's so absurd that they just, like, get into it and there's no... like, mechanical issues with it. There's no syncing. There's no, like, trouble coordinating their movements perfectly or existing as this co-entity for the first time ever. It's just like, oh, cool, now we're strong. And now we're strong, both of us. And now we're kind of in a cockpit randomly. Like, that's all there is to it. It's just, like, it's kind of like it's the ultimate wish fulfillment of Takato is, like, I want to make a Digimon. Wouldn't it be so awesome if I was to fight with a Digimon idea? And, yeah. And Spirit Evolving, I'm, like, it kind of, like... Cass, I'd say, is the best by default, because Biohybrid, the whole concept is fraught issues. I'm not like this is a cool concept that I want for protagonists. It's like, this is a neat evil thing to exist. So I guess Spirit Evolving wins by default.
I think Biohybrids has actually been done in a lot of different ways in different franchises, so I actually am not interested in it very much. Also, like, I'm not about that life. And then, like, I feel like there wasn't a lot at stake, really, like, personally for the characters with Spirit Evolution, actually. I mean, the show tried to make it like there was, but I didn't feel it the same way. I like Bioemerging the best out of these three, because I think there is a long, like, 40 episode process coming into Biomerge, like, being able to do that, and that the entity that they create is somehow, like, the best parts of them and their Digimon and their partnership. Except I agree that, I mean, whatever. I just pretend he doesn't exist. I do agree that, like, there could have been a lot done with, like, sort of the Pacific Rim drift compatibility, like, making that balance. But, like, and that would have been cool. That could be very cool to explore in fan fiction. But I think of these three, it is the most, I think this, Jeff, this points out the difference in our interests, in that I'm more interested in the personalities and the relationships, while you are more fascinated with the, like, technical, ethical questions as well. Does that sound fair?
Yeah.
I think Bioemerging is, like, really cool. Although I, of all the Digivolution stuff, I still prefer, like, the old school not becoming a Digimon stuff.
There we go.
You say you like Bioemerging the most, but then you're like, but I also just like not Bioemerging better.
Yes, that is true. But, like, I like not becoming a Digimon. I think there's a lot of nuance that actually gets lost when there's that ability to do that. It's hard for me to, like, put that in words exactly right now, because that's sort of not what this topic's about, and I haven't really thought about it. It's just, like, a visceral thing I have felt since the first time a person became a Digimon. I just feel like there is something about the relationship of human partner to Digimon partner that I feel is lost, and I feel it is least lost in Biomerging than in the than of these three.
Hmm. Ashley and Andrew.
It's the only one that has a partner. Yeah, sorry.
Well, Biohybrids had a partner at some point.
No.
I mean, what? The Digimon that's injected into them existed at some point.
No, that does not count.
No, I don't.
No, it doesn't.
I don't think that. No.
Just no.
So, Ashley, what's your stance?
I agree with Asher.
Just ditto that whole thing.
Just ditto that whole, like, rant right there.
This is where Ashley and I come together over the Venn diagram. It's a very narrow little...
Yeah, like, little sliver here. Where I'm like, yeah, what Asher said is not good.
Since you ditto what Asher said, I guess I'll, like, push back, or at least explain that, like, my frustration with, like, the mechanical ease of Biomerging isn't so much like it needs to be explored, but that like it feels so jarring for it to be introduced right at the end of the season when it's like they've never gone into battle as Digimon before, and then as soon as they do, it's like not too difficult to do and it's not too scary. Their partners have, and sure, like they're writing some of that, like, but it just feels like that happens, that totally happens in the beginning of Frontier, where it's like where they just like went into battle with the Digimon, like they're not like too shaken up about it, they just like did combat and they're totally okay, like that happens. I feel like it's like hard, like you kind of have to get over it as the entrance to Frontier, and then once you've gotten over it, then it's like that's the norm for the season. But when Tamers introduces it like near the finish line, it's like more jarring.
I think I just like straight up disagree there. Like that's just not how I feel about it.
Andrew, how do you feel?
I feel like Biomerging is earned through hard work, and then Spirit Evolution and Biohybrids are just given to them, sort of. Well, definitely for Biohybrids. Sometimes for Spirit Evolution, just happens.
Well, it's even less plausible when it's earned through Spirit Evolving. It's like, you did a catharsis moment. Here's a spirit that appeared randomly. Makes even less sense when it is tied to the earning.
Actually, Tommy's beast spirit was literally given to him. But yeah, like Biomerging was definitely earned.
Yeah.
And it's a showcase of their bond, literally.
I feel like...
So we win.
Well, y'all are wrong. But so on a similar note, like I titled this topic Biohybrids. I think there's on this note, while we're talking about Biohybrids, we want to talk about them more. And I feel like they're a weird, this isn't so much true once they get to their second forms, their mega forms, but the ultimate forms at least are like this strange, like chimera combination of all the weird alternate evolution mechanics of Digimon. So they're mechanically equivalent to spirit evolving, like a human turning into Digimon. Their naming evokes Biomerging, and they turn into armor Digivolutions. Like all the Digimon, the first three forms are armor Digimon. So like, it's a weird, like
obscure ones.
Yeah, they're pretty obscure. So it's just a weird, like, just take all these like weird mechanics and make a new one, put them all together, and you have a Chimeramon of evolution. And I think the fact that it's like that it's essentially structurally mechanically equivalent to spirit evolving, but first of all, I mean the way they get it is totally different. But the way they frame it is actually even more different. The way they describe it, they're not like, we are human who have been given a power. That's what I would find more natural, actually, that they're like, that they wouldn't identify as Digimon. They'd just be like, we are taking on this mech. Because I feel like they are kind of just taking on, like, all the complaints. It's interesting to follow up Frontier with this, because it's like all the complaints we had about Frontier, where it's like, they're just taking on the mask of Digimon, and they suddenly are the best Digimon ever, and they, like, you know, kind of, they come in, they're like, we're cool with everyone else. That's kind of what they're doing. Like, they are taking on the guise of Digimon, and decimating them, whatever. But they surprisingly, I would expect them to not identify as Digimon, but that's how they introduce themselves. They're like, we are part Digimon, part human. And that's kind of bizarre.
That confuses me, because Kirato wants to eliminate all Digimon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything more, like, I don't know if there's like a, it's inherently contradictory. And I can't decide if that's a, like, an interesting, realistic, the way that, like, humans are inherently contradictory, or if that's just like a plot misstep that, like, they wanted to introduce them in a very compelling, interesting way, and so it contradicts their characters and their motivations and the way they would feel towards Digimon. I don't know which of those two it is.
Yeah. Unless it's like, I guess I kind of squared away that Kirata would do it from his perspective, that it's like he wanted them to die, like he thought they would die. If I think that that's his ultimate end goal, is just them being like stalling the kids.
I don't think Kirata, like, I think his end goal of, like, wiping out Digimon, it would be theoretically possible to just remove the data from these people. I think it's more like, Yeah, I guess the more I think about it, the more I think that, like, them introducing themselves as part human, part Digimon is more of a just, like, a hook that's trying to be compelling, like, trying to be like, ooh, what are these people? How are they both? Because it's kind of, like, there's a TV trope called Child of Two Worlds, which is basically exactly what you think, which is what Keenan is. You know, he's...
Where Keenan is, yeah.
Right. But...
literally.
Well, yeah, the trope is literally. But, yeah, Keenan is, like, the direct equivalent of that trope. And yet, then you're introduced to characters who are even more literally a hybrid of both Digimon and human. And it feels like, oh, it's that, but to the extreme. And then I guess you kind of realize, like, no, it's not really, though. It's, yeah, it's kind of just a disguise. Because if they actually did run into someone who was, like, actually half and half somehow through, like, mating, that would be interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's should we steer away from this conversation before we go into a Digimon human mating? I didn't know that's where I was going.
You did this to this podcast. You invited this. You made your bed, not lie in it. Other cliches, blah blah blah.
I made my bed with Digimon and now human has to lie in it.
Yeah. Yeah. You can be a shooting star.
I have set a clock for 5 minutes for us to do unanswered questions. Why do Pon Chessmon not talk?
I don't know.
Mickey and Megumi are their voices.
They're not Digimon, they're just puppets. Wait, why? Speaking of Mickey and Megumi, why don't they get memory wiped? They're the employees too. Like,
I was very confused about why they didn't get memory wiped.
Yeah, but they're adults. Is there an explanation
for that? Either.
I mean, they're adults.
Yeah, I don't know why Keenan didn't get... I guess Keenan, maybe Keenan because of his parents has...
No, I mean, Keenan, it makes sense, because, like, what do you memory wipe? I don't think it's a much bigger task to memory wipe his entire, like, 10 years
of his entire life, yeah.
Right. He also doesn't have a base memory to go back to, whereas, like, they have daily lives, like, they could presumably be like, okay, you forgot your job for the past 2 years or whatever, but, like, maybe they've been working there the whole 10 years, I don't know.
Still weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why were they so surprised when Marcus punched... I mean, okay, it was a great moment when Marcus punched Koki, and they're like, wait, but he's human. How did that work? And, like, it leads into the thing we just talked about. It's a great moment. But, like, Marcus has gotten his DNA charge from, like, punching Keenan's boomerang. Like, it doesn't need to be a Digimon. Keenan's
boomerang is obviously a Digimon.
Yeah, oh, obviously. Right.
The boomerang, I mean, actually, is the true...
It might be part of... Like, remember Shamanmon had, like, the exact same boomerang?
Did he kill Shamanmon and take his boomerang?
Oh, my God!
It's more likely Shamanmon, like, gave it to him as, like, a birthday present.
After he murdered him.
Okay. So Shamanmon's ghost did it.
Yeah, yeah.
His digi egg did it.
Wait, there was a Shamanmon?
No.
Just in general.
Shamanmon's from season 4.
We're just saying.
But Shamanmon's a different Digimon. You're thinking of the monkey.
Oh,
thing.
You're right. Yeah, what was that guy's name?
Monkeymon.
It wasn't something. Both Shamanmon?
No, they're not Shamanmon. It's some, I think it's like a...
It's an armor, but what was it?
I think it's a reference to, like, Australian Aborigine culture.
Found him. Sepikmon.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Okay, no wonder I didn't remember that. You're right. Shamanmon looks like a Goblimon. My bad.
Right. Okay, more questions. This isn't really a question, but Spencer saving Eldraadimon, the backstory there was just absurd. That's not, like... He punched the ground.
And water came out of it, okay?
Oh my God, it's the reverse of what happens later on.
Okay, wait. Okay. I like that. I like that parallel. That's cool. For another level, I like the parallel that Marcus punches Digimon to get the DNA charge or Digisoul charge or whatever, whereas Marcus's dad uses his DNA charge or Digisoul charge to punch things. It's the opposite. Because he can control his charge and then uses it to punch things instead of needing to punch things in order to get it. Anyway, but also the water filling the moat or whatever, like in the Thomas episode, the reason he's defending the waterfall is because if it's destroyed, which first of all, waterfalls getting destroyed doesn't make them spill like dams. But if the waterfall is destroyed, the whole thing will flood, but then it gets destroyed and the opposite happens. The water goes away. I guess so. Do you know for a fact that it's different in Japanese there?
It's probably different because I think they just made the mistake of Eldraadimon's going to get flooded if the waterfall falls.
Yeah, I guess that's an easy thing to...
That wouldn't make sense because it just doesn't.
I mean, just breaking the waterfall to change how water flows also doesn't make sense. Like, that's not...
The point of them being in the water was... to give them some safety so no one can just walk up to them.
Which also doesn't make sense because they can fly. So, like,
yeah, but the human soldiers.
Which were on things that could fly. And that's how they got there.
They had to lay down the bomb, the space oscillation bombs or whatever.
Okay, I guess they did do that. But it's not like they would know that while setting up the moat. Like, they wouldn't have guessed that there'd be something that'd be laid at the Adrariman's feet. It's all absurd.
Everything's absurd.
No one asks where you... Okay, Yushima disappearing for, like, a whole arc and a half is fine. Like, it's whatever. It's plausible. But, like, no one even asks or wonders where he was. They go back to where he was, where they last saw him, and no one thinks to ask or question or whatever.
He doesn't offer an explanation. He's just like, it's cool.
No, he does. He does offer an explanation. He says where he was.
Oh, I don't remember.
He left a big impression there.
Yeah. I know we weren't shown Lalamon playing hopscotch, but, like, Lalamon playing hopscotch.
How would that work?
Lalamon hopscotch.
Yeah, Lalamon hopscotch. New game fed.
And on the same line as dubbing errors that make no sense, and maybe this is clarified in the next episode, but I assume it's not. At the end of the last episode, Marcus is like, we can still save the Digimon inside the sacred city. And it's like, wait, the city's gone.
I was like, what are you talking about?
I think it's gone. Going to see if there were any survivors in the middle of the ocean.
Okay, I guess in that's the fair. I kind of suspect what happened there is that, like, whoever was in charge of the script didn't, like, just saw, like, a note that was like, okay, the spear lands and destroys something. And they didn't realize that, like, it was the entire city. Because I guess it's also confusing because it's like Yokohama is the city and there's another city and then multiple cities right opposite each other.
Maybe someone just messed up a preposition and instead of from the sacred city, they put in.
But I think the writers were just falling asleep or something.
Like, done.
Done with this digi stuff.
Ridiculous dialogue draft, baby!
We each go around and pick our funniest, most ridiculous, or most touching line from the episode. Jeff will say that we never pick touching lines, but I did last time, so he's just a liar.
That's what they called me in high school.
Yeah.
Liar.
Lying, lie, face. Who's first?
The order is me, then Asher, then Andrew, then Ashley. So that means I go first. And we're only doing one this time, right?
Yes, I thought that's what you wanted.
Yeah.
I didn't think there were that many funny lines. So.
Yeah.
They were spread out, like really spread out.
I think there were a lot of good ones for out of context things, but not great in context. Not great for this format. Okay. It's so ridiculous. Okay. This one's episode 26, and it's when they're all the Digimon, so like Agumon, Gaomon, Lalamon, etc., the other Digimon that aren't important, are sitting around in the cage at DAT's headquarters, and Agumon says,
"The most important thing for me has always been protecting Marcus. I won't let him down."
"That's the best thing I've ever heard you say, Agumon."
"Much better than the usual drivel that comes out of your mouth."
It's like, whoa.
Oh my god.
I don't even remember that, but good on you, Galmon.
Most epic burn in history of Digimon.
All right. This is tough. All right. Okay. So this is from, I don't know what episode number. My note says 2, which I guess means the second one I watched.
So which 27? Makes sense.
They're in the digital gate. Is that what number it is? I don't know.
I'm going to go with it.
The digital gate one.
Cool.
And this is when Samson is confronting the biohybrid kids. And the only thing he says is,
"All you need to know is what I look like walking away."
So seriously. Why isn't this show about Samson?
I know, man, right? Like, Samson, he's cool.
He also, like, totally wrecked that car real hard.
We're going in there.
He took the car, he jumped out, and it immediately exploded, like, before it hit anything. And he jumped out, and you could maybe, like, make a case it hit the railing, but it just exploded.
It just exploded. It was just like, there's no more Samson. What's the point? And
you know he's a cool guy, because he didn't look at the explosion.
Yeah, he was like, I'm too good for this explosion.
Cool guys don't look at explosions. Make a note, get some Lonely Island up in there.
Okay. Andrew, what's your quote?
Okay, I got something from episode 27, and it's also a Samson quote, but it's also hilariously out of context. And I think it's when Samson's about to go into the digital gate to chase after the others. So Samson's like,
Megumi, Mickey, I'm going in.
Sir!
No.
I'm going to.
Is that? what is there? I don't understand.
Good.
You'll never understand, Jeffy. You'll never understand.
Oh, going in.
I mean, I got that part, but it's still not that funny.
It's not. It's just hilarious out of context.
All right, what do I want to pick? Good questions. I'm going to go with one from episode 29. I guess it's when Bancho Leomon is being like, come inside my dojo, I will teach you things. They're like, should we do it? Whatever. And Marcus says,
as long as I get to punch that leather-wearing lion when this is over, I don't care.
That might not be the right place where it actually happens, but he definitely says that at some point, and I was just like, oh, Marcus.
Okay. I feel like an Andrew pick.
As long as I punch that leather-wearing lion?
That does not sound like a me pick.
Yeah. Leather-wearing lion made me laugh. I don't know.
Is he wearing leather? Leather made from animals?
Everything Bancho Leomon said was gold.
I know, saying. Right? I'm really confused why nobody picked
Bancho Leomon thing. My delivery would not have the same effect.
Put in the clips.
Okay. So first of all, I want to clarify that the uniform, that the leather, quote unquote leather that he's wearing is called, the term for it is called a gakuran, which is a like Japanese school uniform type jacket or whatever. But also I think just refers to Japanese school uniforms in general. It's that one sort of kind of Japanese school uniform. And,
boring one.
Yeah. And I think it also, Bancho Leomon looks a lot like Jotaro Kujo from JoJo's Adventure Part 3. I'm glad people make that connection, which is why we made the joke about Jojo Jolien. But I also, looked at the Wikipedia page for Gakuran to see if it mentioned leather. It doesn't. But one of the things I didn't mention in the Bancho segment was that the female equivalent of Bancho is Sukeban, and it's like female gangs of like similar kind of ruffian girls.
Okay. Yankees.
But apparently, so what this page, it's a history of the Japanese school uniform, and it says in the 1980s, Sukeban gangs began modifying school uniforms by making skirts longer. Their active rebellion was making their skirts longer. Yeah. I find that fascinating.
That makes sense. Like, girls' clothes revolutions have always been like, we want to be able to wear pants to work and stuff.
I guess so. It just seems so weird to me that like the female Bancho equivalent is like, we're going to wear not short skirts.
Yeah.
Which is what gets Sailor Jupiter in trouble.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she wears a long skirt, a really long skirt.
She's a violent, crazy person.
Hmm.
And then she continues to wear that for 2 years. She never gets the school, the actual school uniform of the school she's going to. But anyway, it makes sense because, rebellions are always going to rebel against whatever the status quo is. And the status quo is that, these skirts are short and everyone's looking at their legs all the time. And these legs are not for you to look at. Bam.
Bam. Bye.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's one of those culture's different.
Anyway.
If you liked any of these quotes, Digimon go to the polls, pottage.com/503 to vote on your favorites ridiculous dog draft pick. And at the end of the season, we will do our Omega RED, where we pick our favorite quotes from the winners of all these other quotes. So go do that. So we have good winners for that. Okay, we are doing a new quiz this time. Not the gender quiz. We're taking a break from the gender quiz for one episode.
We're taking a break from gender.
Yeah, taking it away from gender. Ivan forced us to take it away from gender. What I was looking for in a quiz, I was trying to find a quiz that would let they would determine what kind of hybrid car you are. That would be a funny joke because they're hybrids. Get it? Get it? Hybrids?
Get it.
Instead, I found this quiz, which is titled it's a BuzzFeed quiz as well, and it's titled "This Very Serious Personality Test Will Reveal Which Hybrid Friends Character You Are." So how should we divide this? We could do each of the biohybrids, and Ash could read. Any other suggestions?
Good.
Okay. Who do you, Ashley and Andrew, who do you claim?
Or what?
A biohybrid to answer for.
What?
For Koki. Are they Koki?
I guess I'm going to pick Ivan.
That's
no,
sad.
I'll do Nanami.
Do you have to be Ivan? All
right. I thought Koki, I mean, this kind of faded really quickly, but like Koki's first appearance, I was like, Koki.
What? What?
I'll just leave it at that.
Are we done?
Okay, let's go.
I'm Ivan. Right.
Cool. Yeah.
You're right. I knew Andrew was going to pick Nanami. Anyway, so this is a pretty straightforward personality test. What follows are 20 statements. Use the scale below each statement to either disagree or agree in terms of how each applies to you, or in this case, your character. All right? Press I'm done when you're finished to find out which hybrid friends character your character is. You guys ready?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my responsibility to worry about other people's feelings. I'd rather make a lot of money than have a job that makes me happy. I love to meet new people and make new friends. I have excellent communication skills. I'm more of a follower than a leader. I feel most relaxed when I'm by myself. I'm more logical than emotional. I am generally pretty open to trying new foods. I tend to be more pessimistic than optimistic. I'm more of a talker than a listener. I don't think any of them are listeners. Spontaneous and unpredictable. I believe most people are well-intentioned, even if I might disagree with them. That's Karada right there. I like cats more than I like dogs. I don't like being the center of attention. Honesty is far more important than kindness. Finishing my work feels better than doing my work really well. I care about what other people think about me. I tend to leave my responsibilities until the last second. I spend a lot of time worrying about things over which I have no control. I'd rather watch the movie than read the book it's adapted from. That's Ashley right there.
This is so hard to graft onto, like, Digimon villains.
You got done?
Yeah. Yes, I clicked done.
Oh, okay, hold on.
I got, you got Ross Chilo Epiochianica.
Ross
plus Rachel plus Joey plus Phoebe plus Chandler plus Monica. I'm the perfect friend.
Wait, it's all of them?
Yeah. I just said all of them.
Okay. Okay, so people who are listening and don't understand and don't see the pictures, which we'll have on the site somewhere, what it means by hybrid friends characters is literally that a combination of friends characters. Mine is Rachel. It's Ross and Rachel. You're deeply, deeply in love with yourself. You're simultaneously independent and not afraid to lean on friends when you need a little help. And the pictures look horrifying.
I got the picture of all of them. Come on.
I want to see the picture for that, Ashley.
I want to see all these pictures.
So I'm putting in the doc mine.
Look at my
members. Look at that face. I'm horrified. So.
Oh my God. Yours
was. I hate and
I didn't know I could be everyone.
Okay, Andrew, what's yours?
Okay, I got Mochelle, which is Monica plus Rachel. While you tend to be somewhat high maintenance, or let's be honest, a control freak, you know it's in your best interest and the best interests of those you love. If you have a flaw, it's that you care too much.
And that's Nanami.
Yes. Yeah, so, okay. So Koki is Rachel. Nanami is Mochelle. And Ivan is everyone.
I think Nanami's might be the closest to being real.
Like, as a face? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Also, I did the thing for Boncho, the gender quiz for Boncho Leomon, because I'm fast. He got, I'll show you in a second.
I mean, we'll kind of do Boncho Leomon later.
No, I already did it.
Whoa! Rostral is terrifying! Okay. All right.
To paint a word picture, someone basically just like did not do a good, they just cut out the eyes and nose of Ross, of Rachel, and put it into Ross's face.
Okay, Bancho Leomon got the angel Ramiel from Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Wow, that's fitting, right?
Jojo. Your gender is the fifth angel, one of the largest and second most powerful. It becomes the first angel to physically penetrate the Geofront when its drill bit pierces through the armor. It is defeated during Operation Yashima.
Huh.
And Jeff, can you read that?
It says Yashima Saksen. Rostchelyopkanika is horrifying. Yeah. The face. It's mostly Rachel.
I know.
With everyone embedded inside her face. Terminal Judgment! Okay, sorry. Before we dive into our reactions, or our final thoughts, we need to take a break to honor the national anthem, the National DigiSquad, National Digimon Data Squad anthem, which for this episode goes a little something like this. Continue. Any last thoughts?
No more Marukimon, no more good show. That's still my conclusion.
There's Bancho Leomon.
No, okay. He's no Marukimon.
I understand.
There's Marukimon in our hearts.
He lives in you.
He lives in me.
What are you
He watches over.
Yes, okay, we don't have time for this. We don't have time for this. We need to. Did anyone else notice the weird part? And I think it was in episode 30 when Yashima, is that the guy's name? Old Man Digivice?
He told them to call him Shima.
Yushima. Oh, okay. It's Yushima.
There was this weirdly cut out. It was like this.
It's good to see you're in one piece, sir.
Okay, sorry. We need to move on. I'm not gonna let you laugh. You're all laughing. Really, you're all laughing really loudly. I had to cut it out. Okay.
What?
Okay, Thomas, Neon, and Koki all look the same. Everyone with blonde hair looks the same.
No. Thomas and Neon a little bit. Koki, no.
Yeah, that's true. Koki's more divergent than the other two.
And we're getting more blonde soon.
Spoilers.
We didn't talk about Nanami, Ashley, Ashley, when you were talking about Nanami and like what you found interesting about that. I don't want to open this whole bombshell, especially with like 3 minutes left in the segment, but like the thing I found was interesting about Nanami's, what she was saying, like a lot of what she was saying reminded me of Gamergate, like the way she was like denying that she was on anyone's side, and then being that like talking about like how like being a genius means being lonely, and I have these vibes like I'm just telling the truth, and like,
oh yeah, everyone likes me, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. And then she's like, oh, hunting Digimon is just a thing I enjoyable hobby I dabble in. And then when like Thomas says the most basic, like, don't hurt Digimon, she's like, what are you, some defender of justice? Like, it felt totally...
Oh, no.
Are you a social justice warrior?
Yeah.
Now you convince me it's true.
Yeah. It's I don't think it's coincidental that, like, those kind of things that are being vilified with her are some of the shittier corners of the internet. Ooh. MVPs?
Bancho Leomon.
Okay. you were DNA disvolved there together.
Yep.
Biomerged. I'm gonna say Thomas.
That's wrong, but okay.
Because like Bancho Leomon I want to like, but I think the like all of his lines come across hokey, and
that's what's great about it. What are you talking about?
I guess I should enjoy that, but I want to enjoy it on the like, oh, he's a cool badass kind of level. So I went into it the wrong way.
Digimon.
Yeah. I don't like him because he's cool. I like him because he's weird and funny.
That's the thing. I think he does give off more of that, like, actually stoic, not stoic, but like badass, like cool guy vibe in Japanese. And so that's what I was coming into expecting. And if I didn't come into this expecting that, I think I would enjoy it on the absurd, funny level. Expectations.
I mean, I say this every episode, but like expectations, Jeff.
Everyone comes into things with different expectations. There's no thing. I just struggle to come up with the word thing. I struggle to come up with the word nothing. There's no such thing as no expectations.
I suppose. But Andrew, yours are always consistently high.
Well, yeah. This wasn't high. This was different. Anyway, Andrew, what's your MVP? Who's your MVP?
Keenan.
Was Keenan in this arc?
Yeah, he has a little character arc of being not from being super revengeful to being not as revengeful and trying to help everyone.
He did have an episode.
He had an episode.
Yeah, yeah, early on. I forgot about that. His whole, like, I'm home and, like, saying goodbye to his parents, his biological parents and everything was pretty good.
Yeah, that moment was good. I felt like everything leading up to it was a little but sure.
I love the three kids in the elevator trying to look really cool as they, like, infiltrated the building or whatever.
Room service.
What's going on?
And so those are our MVPs for this episode. Reminder that you can submit fantasy draft picks for episode 506. And then if we guess those characters, any of the characters from your fantasy team as our MVPs from 506, you'll get fantasy draft points and you'll win some at the end of the season. Go do that. Before we close this out, Ashley, what are your predictions? Where do you think the story will go next?
Well, clearly we've seeded a Thomas having doubt about himself thing, plus apparently he's getting escorted away in a helicopter back to his father, who I assume he has.
And very... so father, you know, from the preview, right?
Yes. Something with his sister. I assume since they're rich, the government's trying to buy them out in some way. Like, Thomas, Ashley, don't stop fighting with doubt. But
Ashley, her name is Relina.
Oh, no.
is that a specific... What did I not get?
That's Gundam Wing. Female lead in Gundam Wing.
Oh.
She's interesting.
She's not that bad.
Okay.
Bad. Yeah. Ashley and I watched Gundam Wing together in college.
We were like... Anyway, so I assume money, politics coming into play there. Plus, I assume that Thomas... for some reason is like not super cool with his dad, probably because of these things. What else?
So you think that's the extent of it, that he like goes off and like does the stuff with his family and comes back, resolves that?
I assume that there could be a darker arc with him, like a Matt-esque rebellion arc that has been seeded with Nanami, being like, you're not really a genius, you're worse than Marcus, just type of deal. But I don't know if Thomas is that easily corrupted, so I'm not putting stakes in that. I guess Bancho Leomon comes back is a thing.
Oh, yeah. Bancho Leomon carries this plot.
So how did Bancho Leomon know so much about DNA?
I guess he has to have met up with Marcus's dad at some point. They must have been cool friends or something, because that would explain a lot. That would explain about many people's personalities. And why Bancho Leomon is a worldly person. Maybe Bancho Leomon is Marcus's dad.
Okay, Ashley.
Cool. No, Barrowmon's not Marcus's dad.
So in the notes, it said, is Barrowmon Marcus's dad?
Bancho Leomon.
I thought Marcus's dad already died.
No, Marukimon will live on forever.
Marukimon is all our dads.
How will Karada be defeated?
This is a big question. Good. The Royal Knights will defeat him, and then the Royal Knights will become the evil people.
Okay, and you think Marcus's dad is Bancho Leomon? Is that for real?
I hope it's real.
Okay.
I hope all ridiculous things are real.
All right. Stay tuned for next episode to see how Ashley reacts.
Oh, no.
When she finds out that Marcus's dad is actually a real knight.
Oh, no. Jeff, don't spoil things.
And they're also Marcus's son time traveling. Welcome to Recommendation Articulation, the segment where we plug, we want to hug. Asher, you start off.
I'd like to recommend the phone game Pocket Frogs. It's really old, but it really doesn't cost, like, you know how you have to spend money on some games to get anywhere? You don't have to do that. And it's a really easy way to completely waste your time.
If that's what you want to do.
Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Sometimes you don't have data on your phone because you didn't pay your cell phone bill.
Okay, I will go next. Okay, I'm going to recommend the latest season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but more specifically, the second to last episode that has come out at this point now, and by now it'll be like a month or two old by the time this episode comes out, but it was season five, episode 10, called Game Night, and it is a really good story about coming out to family, and handles that, I thought, really well. Surprisingly well.
Okay.
Okay, we're doing drop mix.
Yes, we're doing drop mix.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
What is drop mix?
Okay, I know Ashley and Andrews are doing a double hybrid DNA biomerge recommendation together.
We're dropping down sick beats right here.
Yeah. We're throwing down Yu-Gi-Oh cards onto a board that then makes it into magic.
What? It creates beautiful music.
Yeah. It's a good way to waste hundreds of dollars buying cards.
It transcends all genres.
Asher, if you were here, no, we have to play it together someday, Asher, when you're not in Israel.
All right. Well, that'll be next year.
Next year. Oh, so tragic. But yes, Drop Mix is basically a combination of music and card game. You get cards that are different parts of songs, like popular songs.
But they're like just small loops.
Yeah, it's normally like a verse and the chorus or something. So it's songs like Closer and everything. So the thing that, costs a lot of money is
Ashley is buying all completely the cards. Jealous of the fact that I found the Flawless pack, which has like one of her favorite songs.
I'm not. I bought it. I bought it recently. I haven't gotten it yet, but I bought it.
Yeah, but I actually have it in person right now.
Whatever. All you need is Bangarang by Skrillex to make anything sound good.
That's kind of true.
That's my running theory right now. And that one comes with the game, so you're welcome. Put that in any slot and you're gold. It'll all sound great.
And you can also ruin everything by using Evanescence's Bring Me to Life.
No, yes! I mean, good things in there. That's a lie. That's a lie.
I love that song.
Yes. Okay. So it's basically you making remixes, like elaborate mashups, I guess, is more.
Oh, that sounds fun.
You know, right?
And the most expensive card right now is Transformers.
What?
This has been Podedges 505, covering Digimon Data Squad episodes 26 through 33. Let us know what you thought about biohybrids, whether you think they're amazing and we're all wrong for liking them less than biomerging. What you thought about the outfits and which hybrid friends character you would be. Send your comments to podedges.com/505, and you can also send any of your thoughts or reactions to Podedges on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, podedges@gmail.com, or with the Will thread, or the r/Digimon subreddit thread for this episode, or by sending an entire city of Digimon into the real world to cause the bay water to rise and flood cities where we live. Please don't do that, but it would get our attention if you did. And also go to podedges.com/505 to vote on the Ridiculous Dialogue draft pick and to rate the episodes in this arc.
You can also answer our voicemail question if you want to be featured in the next feedback episode. The question this time is, what are your favorite and least favorite Digivolution mechanics? If you disagree with us, you're wrong. Submit your voicemail by emailing an audio recording of 90 seconds or less to podedges@gmail.com.
Special thanks to Xteradamon for our new Agumon logo for Season 5, and to our prodigious Patreon supporters who help make everything we do possible. Special thanks to our current champion Patrimon, Diab Jomon, the infamous Tokujo on Twitter, Joe Kido, Kailunamon, and Sam Kruwagamon, who's also on the Moncast. Our ultimate Patrimon, Andy Lusamon, who's at Tamer Theory on Twitter and doing a Digimon comic at tamertheory.com, David Graumon, and our mega Patrimon, Punchy Punch Punch Marcus.
If people want to follow us on social media, Ashley, where can they find you?
I'm AshMcD00 on Twitter, and my other shoujo manga podcast is at Shoujo Intel.
Asher, if people want to see your Tumblr queue from months ago.
Actually, my Tumblr queue from like last week now. So if you want a ton of like Final Fantasy 15 fan art, you can follow me at Asher Dashery on Tumblr.
Angie, where can people find you?
At Drew Softman on Twitter.
And I am Jeffling Jeff on Twitter, and the podcast is Podigious, in case you don't remember what you're listening to.
Share the podcast with the friends that are allowed to call you a furball, because they're your friends. And don't share the podcast with self-narrating gamergators who don't know that no means no means no.
And join us in 2 weeks as we take down Karada with Data Squad episodes 34 through 38. Bye.
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 And remember, never stop digivolving.
In episode 26, Memory is the First Thing to Go, a.k.a. more like Recrap episode. The memory wipers become the memory... No. cool. Give me a second. Wipies? Okay, sure. Yeah, that's should be said. The memory wipers become the memory wipies as our wannabe men in black get one-upped by actual men in black. And Yoshi remembers she had a roommate.
I had a roommate?
That was the weirdest thing.
No, wait. We were roommates?
I had an employee? In episode 27.
Wait, sorry. Sorry, I was laughing. Can you start over?
What's wrong with laughing on the podcast?
Because it'll cut weird. It's fine. Start over.
You don't have to cut out our laughter. These are sounds of joy that we gift to
What just happened? What?
What?
I somehow my notes got mixed up. And so like my notes, so I have this one thing it says, it's one like bullet point. It says also awkward for Keenan to be absent and then never discuss on screen, referring to the Digivolutions. And then the sub bullets are Runaway Locomon and 505 Digiworld Dramogamon.
What? What is happening?
Jeff has lost his mind.
This is Podigious.
I think those are the episodes.
Podigious has become.
Those are the episodes that one of the directors of those episodes I was talking about before directed. The weird stylistic ones.